Kof Ches Shabbat, Friday the 8th of February, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, Chazor on Hilchus Ribbis.
Morning. First I have to apologize, I have a bad cold, so if my voice starts to fail me, then I've had some members of the Olim who have volunteered to step forward. The parasha begins, Eidam HaMishvotim Asher Tosim Nifneim. Mefarshim explain that this concept of Tosim Nifneim is a concept that when it comes to Mishpatim, when it comes to monetary halachas, which can sometimes be very complex and difficult to grasp, there's an importance in giving them over in a way that's Tosim Nifneim. It's mamish clear that everyone can take something away. Over the last however many years, Baruch Hashem, we've had various different shurim on Hilchos Ribbis, some more complex, some less complex. And I seem to have found the last few months that come across numerous cases which have mamish, should mamish be poshut, that their isur, jabonon involved. And therefore I thought today, in this week's parasha, we have the Issa of Ribbis, one of the parashas that mentioned the Issa of Ribbis. I thought it would be a good opportunity to just chazer mamish the basics. So I apologize if there aren't any chidushim here for anyone. Faket, if there aren't any chidushim here for anyone, then you're all doing okay. So just to start mamish at the basics, and then we'll go through some of the common scenarios which seem to keep cropping up. Ribbis is basically split into three different shlavim. There's Ribbis Ktusa, which is Ribbis Nateria, which is talking about a scenario where a person lends money at the beginning. It begins with a halva, and the Ribbis, the added amount which is meant to be paid, is fixed from the beginning. That's the word Ribbis Ktusa. It's Kotatz from the beginning. That's Ribbis Dereisa. Ribbis Dereisa, the halacha is Yotze B'dayonim. Yotze B'dayonim does not actually mean that person can come down and be Yorid L'Nechosa or to force him to give it back, but it means that Bezen will do their utmost to encourage the person to Mekayim the mitzvah of returning the money of the Ribbis. The second stage of Ribbis is Avad Ribbis, which is Ribbis Drabonon, either not through Derech Mechrememko or not properly fixed at the beginning, and that there's a Chiv Lotzi Stei Shemaim to return. And finally there's Ribbis Mukdemes and Ribbis Mukheres. Ribbis Mukdemes classically would be a case where a person gives someone a present in order that in the future they will lend the money. And Ribbis Mukheres classically is a person lends you money, he's already paid off the chayiv, and now it comes to, let's say, Purim, and he sends him a gewaldige, beautiful shlachmonos, far, far more than what you would ever send him, if you would ever send him bechlal. And it's clear that the reason why you're sending it to him is because of the fact that previously he lent you money, even though it's already been paid back. And there's a nidden in the poskim as to whether Ribbis Mukheres even applies if at the time of Purim, if at the time when I pay back the money, I give back extra. If at the time when I give back money, I give back extra, if that's called Ribbis or not. I don't know how many of you do Daf Hayomi. In yesterday's Daf, there was an interesting scenario where a person was owed money for work that he'd done. It was a poel who was owed money. And when he came to ask the money to be paid back, he was told, no, I haven't got the money. And he said, well, give me land and give me kelim and all sorts of different things he tried. And the person said, chobnish. And he went home for Yontif, despondent. I think it worked for 3 years without pay. And after Yontif, the person who's hired him, the balabos, came and he asked him, why did you think I said to you I didn't have money, etc. And there was a whole, what goes into the Indian of Don Lachavskus, which isn't for today. But at the end, the Gemara says that when he came to him with his money, and with three donkeys full with food, with drink, and mashke, but it doesn't specify what it's for, but it's clear that he's giving him an excess of the money which he owed him for the rent, and there's a shaila why that itself isn't a problem of Ribbis. The Chasam Sofer, in fact, and the Yaivets bring a raya from this Gemara. They say, Klof, this Gemara, that you see when it comes to Schiris Poelim, that there isn't a problem of Ribbis if you're giving at that later stage. Which, if you look through the halachas in Yeridah, in Simchus Samach, it's not mamish so clear whether that's universally accepted in a case where it's apparent that you're giving extra. In a case where you roll it all up together and you give extra and it's not so clear how much you owed in the first place, then it's easier to be mekel. In a case where it's mamish clear that you're giving a dovam nosef, then it's not so posha. The Chochmas Adon Pasha says such a thing is awesome. Akabonim, those are three different cases. Now, the problem with Ribbis is that if a person comes up to you and says, can I borrow money? And you say, yes, but I want to charge you interest, then hopefully most people understand That's the problem of ribis. However, any slight deviation from the poshut scenario, and for some reason, people seem to forget about the halacha, and they just don't see it. If it's not mamish black and white, they don't see it. Whether that's because it's in a workplace scenario, and therefore they're thinking more along the business lines, and they're not aware to have their eyes open for the potential pitfalls, I'm not clear. So, let's start off with Rav Moshe. We mentioned Rav Moshe in the past. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a well-known kula, where Rav Moshe holds that the halacha of ribis in the Torah is talking about a case where a person lends money to an individual, to a yochid, and that person is personally liable for that money. And because he's personally liable for that money, that creates a shibut aguf. And because there's a shibut aguf, that's what the Torah says. Now that you have a shibut in this person, you're not allowed to charge him interest. If you charge him interest, you're able to isidarise. You have a number of isidarais. The Moshe says, if a person lends a limited company, because the company is limited, there is no shibut aguf on the shareholders or the partners or whatever it is of the company, because it's a limited company, so you're lending the company or not lending the individual, there's no shibut aguf, and since there's no shibut aguf, there's no problem of charging ribis. That's the halacha of Rav Moshe. This halacha of Rav Moshe only to a company. Then it doesn't matter where you're, if you're from an individual or from a company. The bottom line is, though, you're lending to a company. If a company lends an individual, then Rav Moshe doesn't apply. It's because you're lending to a company, and the longest is because there's no shibut aguf. If, for example, you would be lending a company and you would also want personal liability, then Avadi, even Rav Moshe would agree there's a problem of ribis. It's only because there's no shibut aguf, Rav Moshe says that's not what the Torah was talking about when the Torah asked for ribis, when there's no shibut aguf. Rav Moshe agrees that company is a person. Let's just be clear on this. Everyone agrees that halachically, we push this pasuk when it comes to halacha, a company is not considered as a separate entity. And therefore, if a person owns chometz in a company, it's a problem on Pesach. We don't say it's not owned by a Jew, it's owned by a company. We don't allow a company to be open on Shabbos and say it's not a yid working on Shabbos, it's a company working on Shabbos. We generally in halacha look at a company as a shutfus. The reason for that is because until the legal system came along however many years ago and created this bubble called the company, it was shutfus. So they've created this legal entity for certain reason, protection, limited, etc. We'll come to that in a second. But halachically, we look at a company still as a sum total of its of the owners of that company. However, that doesn't mean, it's not to do with ribis, but that doesn't mean that we don't recognize the limited liability of a company. Right? The Gemara gives us a number of situations where we have a concept called apoitiki, where I can lend a person money and be restricted to claim only from this particular field. And if this particular field gets flooded, the person might be a millionaire and there's nothing I can do about it. So similarly too, when you trade or have dealings with a limited company, you're accepting the limitation of that company by definition. If the person has LTD next to their name when you're trading with them, you know your ability to claim is restricted to the assets of that company. But that doesn't mean that the company is a concept. The company is a shutus with limited liability.
Are we accepting English law then? As regarding
obviously not.
So what we're doing, we're not accepting the English law perspective that a company is a concept, is a separate entity. What we are accepting is that a company is limited liability. Right? I'll give you a similar example. This is not much the same Nukuda. But therefore, if a person, what about personal bankruptcy? This is really nothing to do with the Shiva, just because it's touching on here. Personal bankruptcy. Halacha doesn't recognize personal bankruptcy. Why? Because why should it? Until the concept came along that all of a sudden a person can owe a fortune of money, can sign on a dotted line and be potter from having to pay, and if in 8-9 years' time they win £1 million in the lottery, they're not mechuyev to give any of the money over, doesn't exist. Bankruptcy is a concept which is a legal entity which halacha doesn't recognize per se. Limited, like a company's bankruptcy, corporate bankruptcy, is recognized in halacha, because when you deal with a company, you're accepting the ability to claim as restricted to the assets of that company. So, many poskim do not use Rav Moshe at all. Some poskim use Rav Moshe as something to sniff when it's dealing with Ribbis Trabonon, etc. One of the reasons why they don't use Rav Moshe is because the concept of apotiki exists in Chazal as well. The concept of limited liability exists in Halacha as well, and that doesn't mean that there's no Shibut Aguf. You can have a Shibut Aguf which the person is Meshibut, but your ability to claim from that Shibut is restricted to a specific asset. So, most poskim don't use Rav Moshe. As far as I'm aware, in England, nobody uses Rav Moshe l'chachila without any other things to be mitzdarif to it. So, with that in mind, when dealing with a company, mamish, you only come across situations where you have people who are classed class themselves as investors. Right? They're investors, they're investing in a company, or not even investing in the company. Many times they say straight up, they're lending the company money, and this is the rate of return which they want back. And mamish, you're dealing with a situation of ribis. Sometimes, people say they're investing in a company, right? They're investing in a company, but they want their money guaranteed. So depending on the proposition, sometimes the person who's investing, so the person who's got the company, says, listen, you invest in my company is such a short deal, I'll guarantee your capital. I'll personally guarantee your capital, and the return will be dependent on whether they're profits or not profits. It's a Mishnah. It's Mamash Mefurish a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, in the case where a person lends sheep to a shepherd, and he says to the shepherd, I want these tzoin guaranteed. That means that if the tzoin are worth 100 pounds a sheep, I'm not into the current rate of sheep, if the sheep are worth 100 pounds a sheep at the time that I'm giving to you, I want to make sure on each sheep I get back at least 100 pounds. And if there's more than that, if they have shearings and babies and everything else, then we'll split the profits proportionally however we decide it. That's a problem. Why is it a problem? Because since my capital is guaranteed, al pi halacha, guaranteeing capital means it's a loan. Halva, what's the difference between a halva, a loan, and an investment? Investment is there's a risk factor. You could gain, you could lose. The moment you eliminate the risk factor and there's a guaranteed capital, even if it's not guaranteed profits, that then becomes ribis. So this situation already is something which I'm telling you is common, that you have situations where people are lending money to companies, or they're not calling it lending, they're calling it investing it, but their capital is guaranteed. Already there you have a problem. Sometimes you have a situation where a person lends money to a company or invests money in a company, and there's a profit share arrangement where the person investing the money to the company gets the first chunk of profits, right? Preferential shares. So for example, I lend £1 million to a company. It could be that the person who runs the company has put in some of his own money, whatever it might be. And now, let's say he hasn't put in his own money. So I lend him the money. I put the money into the company. And then there's an agreement that I'm going to get back, apart from my money, I then will get back revach before he'll get back revach. Right? So in other words, the first 20,000 pounds that comes in, I'll get. And then the next lot will split 50-50, for example. Now one has to understand, and this someone has to understand, the money which I invest into a company, what is the arrangement as far as the liability is concerned? Right, if I come to a person's got a startup company, he's got a gewaldig idea, or let's say he finds a property which he thinks has got massive potential. He hasn't got any money. And I come to him with my £1 million, he's going to get £4 million from the bank, the project's £5 million, and this is the deal. When I come to him with my £1 million, what is the arrangement between me and him as far as liability on the £1 million? Is he in any way liable for any of my £1 million? If he isn't liable for any of my £1 million, then I'm not lending him any money. I'm literally investing in the deal. If I'm investing in the deal and I'm not lending him any money, we can split it however we want. If we agree between us that let's say he's liable for 20% of the money, 50% of the money, whatever the deal might be, and here we've seen all sorts of different arrangements depending on how desperate the man is for the money and how desperate the etc. So that's what's called in Chazal an iska. That's mamash an iska. The Gemara says iska, standard iska, high iska, palga milva, palga bikotin. If I come to someone with £100,000 and I say, here, I'm going to invest this with you, minastam, we say £50,000 I'm not investing, £50,000 I'm lending him, and he's investing. £50,000 I'm investing. And why are we splitting the profits 50-50? Because we've each got £50,000 in this deal. So then I'm lending him half the money. Half the money is mine. And all my revach will only come from my half of the money. That's a standard setup of an iska. In such a situation where you've lent him money and he's invested his money that you've lent him, there's a halvor. So how are the profits split? The profits need to be split according to the same ratio of the money which has been invested. If he is liable to pay me back 50% of the money, then he's entitled to get 50% of the profits. He's a 50-50 shutuf. If he's liable to pay me back 50% of the money, but he has to give me 60% of the profits, right? Or, for example, I tell him, you know what, but before we split the profits 50-50, I want to be getting 5% per annum on the money which I brought to the table. Right? That's another situation which you find quite common. Let's say I've got money sitting in a bank. I've got £1 million sitting in some savings account, and I'm making 5% on this money. You come to me, and you say, you've got this gewaldige deal, right? I should give the £1 million, give it to you, you can buy the property, and we'll split the profits 50-50. If the arrangement is that we're liable, jointly liable, 50-50, that means if Chas v'Shalom, this whole deal goes sour, you're going to have to pay me back £500,000, if that is the arrangement. So that means I'm lending you half the money. If I tell you, okay, listen, I'm happy to split the profits 50-50, but before we split the profits, I want to get 5% per annum on my £1 million, because that's what I was getting when it was in the bank. Why should I lose out by that? That I want to know I'm getting. That's ribis. Because why? I can charge 5% on my half of the money, that's me charging myself. There's nothing wrong with the person charging himself interest. Why am I charging 5% on the other half a million, which I've lent to you? That means I'm charging you interest. Before you pay me back anything, I'm charging you interest on the money which I've lent to you, and that itself is already a problem. Some other situations where we come across ribis. The classic situation which we've spoken about a number of times before, but seems to keep coming up, is a situation where a person buys a house, first time home purchaser, child buys a property, he wants to get on the first rung of the ladder, and he can't buy it himself because he can't get a mortgage, he can't get whatever it might be. And the parent steps in at that stage, and the parent, now there are different ways how this works, the classic case how this works is that the parent buys the property in their name, and registers it in their name, and they get the mortgage from the bank, but really it's understood between the child and the parent that the property belongs to the child. First question which you have to know is, if the property belongs to the child, is there anything written documenting anywhere that the property actually belongs to the child? Some a good idea, because if there isn't anything written anywhere that the property belongs to the child, if that parent is nifta, then that child is going to have a fight with their siblings as to whether this is part of the Yerusha or whether it's really their house. Right? On the land registry, it's written in the father's name. The mortgage is in the father's name. The child might be paying the mortgage every month, but the other children could say, that's rent. You've been renting our father's property, and you've been paying the rent. You've been paying is the mortgage. So it's Tamar's way from Yosha would say, to make sure there's no complications afterwards. There should be some kind of document somewhere showing who the property is titled, a trustee, showing who the property really belongs to. But Luyatsu, the property taka belongs to a child. Then the problem is that the capital which the father borrowed from the bank in order to buy this property, he lent to his son. Right? It might not have been in a situation where he gave him a dustbin bag full of cash, but practically he's lent it to his son. How do we know he's lent it to his son? Because when the son would sell the property, it's understood between all parties, well, it will be the father signing it because it's in his name, but it would be understood between all the parties that the bank would have to get paid back their capital. Right? So now, if the property really belongs to the son, then why does he have to pay back any of the capital he gets from selling his house to his father or to the bank? It's his money. Turns out it's poshut. If let's say, let's just talk some numbers. Let's say a property is £500,000. Right? Not in gold screen, but the property is £500,000. And so it's 100,000 down payment and 400,000 from the bank. So the down payment, let's say whether the son has it himself, whether he gets it as a present from his parents, it's irrelevant. That's his money. 400,000 the father gets from the bank and the mortgage, and he's lending that 400,000 to the son. So that money is the halvor. Every month, the money which the son pays the mortgage to the bank is mamash ribis deraisa. Why is it ribis deraisa? Because if I lend you money and I tell you that I want you to pay me back the money which I'm lending you, and in addition, I want you to pay my electricity bill. I want you to pay my gas bill. Well, that's ribis deraisa. You don't have to pay the ribis to the malva. You can pay the ribis to whichever address the malva gives you. So here as well, the father is lending 400,000 to the son. Every month, the son is paying the mortgage bill. Whose mortgage bill is it? It's his father's mortgage bill. Why? Because the father's borrowed money from the bank. Let's give you a more simple scenario from this. Forget the mortgages for a moment. Let's say a son needs £50,000 for a business deal or whatever it might be, and he hasn't got that kind of money. He goes to his father, and his father's got an overdraft facility. His father can borrow £50,000 on a very decent rate, and he's going to give that to the son. The son is going to pay the rate. Mamash ribis deraisa. Why? The father's not gaining a penny. He's not gaining from the deal. He's doing his son a favor. He's not keeping a penny profit. Doesn't make a difference. Why? Because what's the son doing? The father is borrowing money from a goy, and for that he has to pay interest. Nothing wrong with that. He's then lending that money to a yid, and he's telling the yid, you have to pay me the interest, or pay the goy, the interest which I have to pay the goy. There's no hetzer in that. Let's say another way around, similar scenario. A father's got this money sitting in a savings account. He says to the son, you know what, I'll lend you the £50,000. You, to borrow it from the bank, would have to pay 5, 6, 7%. I'm getting 3% here. Just pay me the 3%. Why should I lose out? Why should I lose out? I'm doing you a favor. You're paying less than you'd have to pay anywhere else. Why should I lose out? What do you mean, why should you lose out? Every situation in the Torah of Ribbis, you lose out. Every situation in the Torah says there's a mitzvah to lend money to a yid, and there's an issur to charge for it. Anytime you're lending to a yid and you're doing your mitzvah, you could be lending to a goy and charging Ribbis. So anytime you lend money to a yid and don't charge, you're losing money, by definition. And our Bavli came, the Torah says, you're not allowed to charge. So just because you're covering the potential revach you could get, or you would have got, had you lent it to a goy or lent it to a bank, doesn't make a difference. The Torah utters charging ribbis to a yid.
Is there halachic ways around it?
There are lots of halachic ways around it. First, you have to know there's a problem.
Can you have a
So let's spend the last few minutes discussing the solutions. Right. The halachic way around problems of ribbis normally is writing a heter iska. Heter iska is not heter ribbis. Right? It's not just a document that you sign and then gewaldig. You know, we have no idea what we've signed, we have no idea if it applies, if it works, but we know ribbis is now a problem. Right? Heter iska has ways how it works, very briefly how it works, and then we'll see the limitations of it. Heter iska means that you're investing in the person, in the loiva that you're giving the money, you're investing with him. There are different ways of doing a heter iska. You can do a heter iska where it's kuli pikodin, or a heter iska where it's palgam over palgam pikodin. Like we alluded to before, when you invest with someone, you can either say, I'm lending you part of the money, and part of the money I'm investing, or I'm investing all the money. There are different ways of doing it. However, the way a heter iska works is, I'm investing with you. Now, when I invest with you, it's nothing personal, but you know, times are difficult. I'm entitled to tell you, you know, let's do the other way around. You're investing with me. Right, you're investing with me. You can say to me, listen, I'm happy to invest with you, but I don't trust you. You know, I'm not happy that I should turn around at the end of the year and say, listen, I'm really sorry, we didn't make any profit. Or worse, really sorry, you lost your money. Listen, you win some, you lose some. You don't want to just go on my word. So therefore, you put into the investment agreement from the beginning that if there's no profit, you're only mechuyev to believe me if I make a shur. And if I lose the capital, you're only mechuyev to believe me if they're eidim. If they're eidim. Eidim, which means Eidim, Koshim, Natera, which are very difficult to have. Eidim, that Imamish, it's gone bad. And therefore, if you don't have that, then I'm mechuyev to pay you the amount which we predicted such an investment will be able to make. Right? So we invested 5%, 10%, whatever it might be, that we predicted such a deal could make. That's how a heter iska works. So therefore, when it comes to the time, they will pay you back that 5%, 10% in order not to have to make a Shuam Natera on whether they did or didn't make profit. That's how a heter iska works in a nutshell. The problem with a heter iska, problems with a heter iska, two main problems. Number one, the percentage interest which you're entitled to charge has to be something which realistically could have been made in that time period. Right? So there have been many different scenarios over the years of people who thought they were okay because they had a heter iska, but the heter iska, the problem with the heter iska is it comes as a blank form. Right, so you can either go to someone to draft your heter iska, or you can apply for just to have a heter iska form. Heter iska form has the percentage missed out, because we don't know what percent you're going to put in. Some people then go, right, 30%, 40%, 50%, you know, and they think they've got a kosher heter iska form and everything's fine. But the figures which they're putting are ridiculous. Who can expect to receive those kinds of returns? Then it comes time to collect the money, and they can't get a penny of it. So they can't get a penny of the revach because they put in figures which don't make sense. Right, so that's number one. Number two, and here's the problem which we've been talking about. Heter iska means I invest with you. I don't know whether you have made a profit or haven't made a profit. I'm not mechuyev to believe you because that's what we signed in the heter iska. Therefore, please pay me back my capital with the anticipated profit, and even if it made more, I'm meichel my rights to more. What happens if you know it didn't make money? What happens if you know it didn't make any money? I'll give you the classic scenario where a person knows. What happens if a yid is the CEO of a company, right? He's the CEO of a company, and he decides that the company needs to borrow money. The company needs to borrow money, and if they borrow from a bank, they're going to be paying 6%, and so therefore he's prepared to lend his money to the company at 4%, or maybe even 6%. He sees a good opportunity. Listen, the company is going to go in any case to the bank. I lend my own money. I've got my own money. I lend my money to the company. But how can you charge the company 5-6%? So he writes a heter iska. You write a heter iska between him as an individual to the company, Gewaldig, except for one point. The whole Eretz Yisrael only works because you can say, I don't know whether you did make money or didn't make money, so therefore pay me the money. What do you mean you don't know? You're the CEO, you know better than the other shareholders. You're the one who drafts the accounts, you're the one who knows everything. You're mamash in the kish because of what's going on here. So this is any scenario where you're dealing with a shutuf or a partner in a company drafting something, lending money to the company, then you've got to think twice before you use a regular hetiska. Another scenario would be, if let's say you take this first time homeowner, right? Let's say he's a young man, he might be sitting in Kollel, he's not making massive salaries that you know of, he's got no investments you know of. The only thing he has in the world is this property. He has this house. This house, you know where it is, because Baruch Hashem, you know where your child lives. And you know more or less whether the property has gone up or down in value. So again, what right do you have to turn around and tell the child, every month you should be paying my mortgage, because I don't believe you that the investment I've made with you of £400,000 hasn't generated a profit. What do you mean you don't believe me? If he's taka, a person who's got his own investments, he's got his own deals, and you don't know what's going on, gewaldig, much better. In this scenario, this is an unusual case. The less you know about your child or son or son-in-law, the better off you are for this particular halacha, financially. Yeah, because then you can say, listen, I don't know if you made money, and therefore I'm entitled to take the profit. But if you know, mamish, what's going on, let's say he's your son, everything he has in business, whatever, he comes to you, discusses with you, he cries about how everything's going wrong, and you know that poshet's, you know, he hasn't got, and you trust him, and you believe him, then you have a problem. Because you're not entitled to keep taking those monthly payments if you know that there's no way he could have made that profit.
Would the borrower be allowed to have a hetiska nulled or declared valueless?
In such a scenario, if the malva would agree, right? Let's say everyone's honest, right? If the malva would agree that he knows what's going on here, then he doesn't have a right to take the character of the profit, yes? So that's what I'm saying. It's not just a blank form which someone signs and you don't know what's going on. In the case of Shutfim, let's just deal with that. In the case of Shutfim who want to invest in a company, in their own company, and they've got first hand knowledge, there is a way around it. They only have first hand knowledge of what's going on in this particular company. The other shareholders in the company might have other assets and investments and business which they've got no idea about. They can invest in the other Shutfim personally, but their ability to claim they can restrict to the assets of this company. Right, so again, let's say this scenario. The company business, it's a partnership, right? And the partnership needs £50,000. I'm going to lend my £50,000 to the partnership. So 50-50 partnership to me and my partner. Now, £25,000 that's being lent to me, I can charge myself all the ribbis I want without any problem at all. But £25,000 I'm lending my partner, how can I charge him interest? Teretz says, well, have a hetzer isko, I'm investing, it's not the standard form. I'm investing into him personally, he's called Yankel. I'm investing into Yankel personally to £25,000, but he doesn't want that he's personally liable for this money, because it was meant to be a loan to the company. So you can write in the hetzer isko, I'm investing in him personally, but my ability to claim is restricted to his shares in this company. So the bottom line, you'll have the same thing. Your ability to claim will be restricted to the company. But why you're claiming isn't just because of what was generated in this company. This company, you might know, didn't make a profit. But you know that your uncle, I have no idea whether he's successful, not successful, what other ventures he might have. And for that, I'm entitled to claim. But I can only claim from his shares, from his assets or the equity, whatever it might be, in this particular company. Shkoyach. Shalom.